Welcome to another episode of the Peak Performance Selling Podcast, where we interview top sellers and sales leaders to learn the different tips, tricks, and mental strategies that they use to create sustainable peak performance. Let's get rolling. Welcome to this week's episode of the Peak Performance Selling Podcast. Super exciting guest. You've probably seen him floating around LinkedIn, on different podcasts, dropping tons of advice on how to not just grow your income as a seller, but significantly multiply your income. And so Marcus Chan is the founder of Venley Consulting Group, and he helps AEs sell and earn $50,000 to $100,000 more each year through his coaching and training programs. If that doesn't catch your eye, or ear in this case, I don't know what will. And Marcus has a really interesting background and is doing a ton of work to really help elevate the sales profession. He's an official member on the Forbes Business Council. He's been in Forbes, Yahoo Finance, Market Watch, and a bunch more. He's been one of the top sales experts to follow by Salesforce and LinkedIn. But prior to getting into launching Venley Consulting, he was in corporate America for over 14 years. He worked for a couple different Fortune 500s, was promoted 10 times in 10 years. Yes, once a year, maybe twice in 1 year even, we'll find out. And has won a bunch of different awards for not only being a top seller, but also being a top leader, as he led one of the top sales regions in his company, having over 110 folks on his team. Now he's living and has been for a while in Portland, Oregon with his wife, Sarah, without an H. I've got an H. That's with right. Mine. You and Jason Bay have that, you know, no H Sarah thing going on and his son, Roman. So Marcus, thank you so much for joining on. Excited to have you.
My man, excited to be here. We're going to have some fun today.
We will. You've got a ton of knowledge to drop, as I've been following you on LinkedIn for a while and learning every day, listen to you on a few different podcasts as well, and just love what I've heard. And I always love starting out with guests understanding what's been an experience through your life that's really impacted how you sell, coach, lead.
Such a great question. And I'll say, you know, one of the greatest things I probably learned early on was to fail forward. And when you fail forward, you learn a lot very quickly because you have a very tight feedback loop. But when I really reflect across the board from, you know, my life to leading people to, you know, to selling and all those things, whether I had success or I struggled, which I've struggled a lot, one of the biggest things I've really learned that's probably impacted me the most is really focus on really increasing your own self-awareness, being really aware of how you are, you know, how you can be a peak performer mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, to how you can be a great, you know, spouse, a great husband, wife, a great, you know, brother or sister, mother, to be a great employee, great salesperson, great leader. And it starts internal first. And what we don't realize a lot of times is our outer world is a reflection of our inner world. That's why I'm excited to chat today, because I have found over time, even though I'm definitely not perfect, I'm constantly working on my self-awareness. And I'll give you a really good example. So I remember, you know, early on, you know, as a leader, I got promoted, and this one was brand new into a leadership role. I had some success in sales. I thought I was pretty good at my job. And I remember taking over a team that really was resistant to me taking them over. They were underperforming. And I came in very hot, just saying, hey, everyone, you guys have been struggling. Yep. Here's this playbook. Here's how we're going to do things. I've been the best. I've been the number one guy. We're going to do A, B, and C. Well, little did I know, even before that point, they had created a perception about me. They saw how I ran and executed sales in my territory, my pipeline. And before I even sat down with them, they're like, oh, this is just Marcus. He works like 80 hours a week. He's in a grind to the bone. He's a machine. And I just didn't have that self-awareness to understand that might be their perception. Even though I didn't expect them to do that, that was what they perceived of me. So that was like walking in and having that explode in my face. And then I add on a course, you know, my stupid plan that I tried to get them to do, you know, I had like a mutiny in my hands. So And I remember that night after I kind of, you know, I shared my grandiose plan to them and I had failed terribly. And I was complaining to my girlfriend, now wife, about how they're terrible and blaming everyone. She's like, well, have you even tried asking them what they want? I'm like, well, no, of course not. Like, you know, like, do you think it's perhaps maybe how they perceived before you walked in? I'm like, oh my God. And I just realized walking in, they already had these objections to my leadership style, of my selling style before I even met with them. So, and I've learned that throughout my whole career, where the more I can be more aware of myself, then the more I can seek to understand other people. And that's really applied, not just obviously from leadership, but also sales as well. From your prospects who potentially may have objections to you, your company, whatever, by just being really self-aware. When you know that, then you can adjust your behaviors, your actions, and what you do, say, write, et cetera, to get a better desired result. So one of the greatest learnings has to be easily is to focus inward first, master that self-awareness, or continue to master it. And when you do that, it becomes much easier to get what you want in life.
Oh, man. I think we could probably spend the entire time talking about that. And we might, because I think this concept of self-awareness is so incredibly powerful for us. Yes, as sellers, as leaders, and as humans. I mean, It's just, these are the things that we haven't been taught how to evaluate or how to assess in most cases.
Correct.
As we went through early childhood education. And most people get there by falling on their face and having some sort of big wake-up call to say, oh, I've got to figure some of this out. And so what are some of the ways that you continue to build self-awareness? How do you think about approaching that and continuing to grow? As I heard you mention, it's, you know, an evolving thing that continues to happen throughout your career. How do you keep coming back to build more self-awareness and continue to learn about yourself?
Great question. So one of the most important things you can do is understand the power of questions. And a lot of times what people don't really think about is every single day we have incoming data. And when data comes into our mind, we usually will ask ourselves questions, right? And usually they're not really good questions. So for example, I'll give you an example. So I remember early on, my boss says, Marcus, sit down and make 100 calls. I'm like, all right, I'm making cold calls and I'm getting my face smashed in. I'm getting totally rejected. People are chewing me out and I'm feeling really bad about myself. And what I didn't realize was I was asking myself questions like, what is wrong with them? Why are they so mean to me? Why are they a jerk? Why is the economy bad? Because the economy is tanking. Why is the economy bad? Why is my boss giving me more support? Why isn't my company giving me more support? Why don't I get more training? Why don't I get more help? And suddenly, before you realize it, all those questions are actually very disempowering because I was blaming everything outward. And one of the greatest books I ever read, especially early on at that time, was Tony Robbins' Awakening the Giant Within. He said, if you don't like the answer, ask a better question. And that's when I realized, I'm like, crap, I'm asking these really bad questions. So how can I reprogram my mind to ask better questions? So I literally remember literally early on when I was training my mind, I wrote these questions out. I taped them to my car. I had them in my office. I had them everywhere. And the questions were like, what's great about this? What can I learn from this? How can I push through this? And now suddenly, these type of questions are much more empowering. So if I had a tough cold call, what can I learn from this? And if my brain naturally says, well, I can't learn anything. Well, if I could learn something, what could I learn? What's one thing I could do differently that may yield a better or different result? Mm-hmm. So now when you start asking this type of question, you start training your mind how to do this. And the early on, I couldn't just do automatic. I had to read the list of questions to myself. I had to train my mind to do it. But over time, you start realizing you can start doing these things and you start to reprogram your mind. So by doing this, now suddenly, when you don't get the desired result, you have a really tight feedback loop, which is an action. There's some sort of feedback, some sort of result. You analyze that feedback and you either take the same action or a different action, get a different result. And you keep going until you get the desired result you want. So that's what I started doing. So this started really building my self-awareness massively. And then I also started doing additional things where, because here's the thing, oftentimes we don't know what we don't know, and we do get blinded by ourselves. So this is where, you know, if you're a salesperson, one of the best things you can do is listen to your own call recordings. When you listen to your own call recordings, you might be pleasantly horrified on how awful that we all sound, from your speech pattern to the questions you ask to the awkward pauses to whatever it's going to be, to how even seeing how they respond. You can just tell so much when you're taking a step back. It's like reviewing game tape. So doing that is really key. But then take a step further. Start getting external feedback, asking other people their feedback. But here, what's really important here, only ask people that have already achieved what you want consistently at a higher level. Because what you don't want is someone who's the same level as you. That's like the blind leading the blind, all right? You want to know what exactly can you change. And when you start doing these type of things, you start becoming better and better and better. So the more feedback you can ask, the better it's going to be. And if you're a leader and you try to improve your self-awareness, which is also equally as important, not greater, it's being able to create the environment and seek the feedback in a way that's going to be, they're going to feel comfortable telling you. So I'll give you a real good example. So I had a really big sales force, and at the level I was at, that sounds kind of egotistical, but at the level I was at, when you're having like conversations with salespeople, sometimes they're like a little bit scared to tell you like what's really on their mind. So I had to make sure I really broke down those barriers and opened their mind to be able to have a conversation with me. And that's doing different things, from sharing stories of vulnerability so they can understand that I'm just like them. I'm human too. I fail, I struggle, but I want to get better. But then put them in an environment can really open those questions up. So I would do these things where I actually did every quarter. I literally would do a 10-minute call with every single rep in my region. 10 minutes, no one else. It's like, boom. And this is in addition to me, when I visit their market, sitting down one-on-one with them, in which we talk nothing about numbers. And literally all I would ask would be, how's everything going? What's on your mind? What can I do better for you? What can I change with my leadership style to get a better result out of you? How can I lead you better? If there's one thing about me you would change, what would that be? Now, it takes supreme self-awareness and confidence to ask those, because sometimes, let's be real here, I didn't like the answer, but that's okay. And only when I get that feedback can I change it. And sometimes we just don't know what we don't know. And I'll give you a real good example. So I remember on one of the calls, we just had a big SKO sales kickoff meeting. You know, it's a lot of fun, totally cool. And you know, all my teams are set up. And I would go around to all my team's tables and say what's up to the team before the awards events and in between the things, whatever. And I remember I just had a great time. I'm not thinking anything about it. A couple of weeks later, I was doing my 10-minute calls. And one of the reps, he's like, Marcus, can I just be really transparent? I'm like, sure. He's like, I feel like you don't care about our team. I'm like, oh, ouch. Like, okay. I'm like, wow. Like, what do you mean? They're like, well, it just seems like, at the sales kickoff meeting, you gave more attention to the other team at our table that had all the Presence Club winners. And it felt like with our team, and we're new, and we're not a performance level we want to be at, and it seemed like he kind of glossed us over. And I'm thinking to myself, dang, that was not my intent at all. Now, I didn't try to justify and say, oh my God, you're wrong, this is why I did it. The truth was, that's how he feels, and that could be how other people feel as well. So I took that feedback, I really internalized. I'm like, and I asked myself, was it true? Did I give more like high fives or whatever, or kudos and recognition to those people? And maybe I did, but now I know better, right? So because of that feedback, anytime I was around those teams or around the people, other teams that had a mix of players on them, I made sure to give them equal attention, because regardless of if it was true or not, that's how they perceive, and perception is reality.
Oh my gosh. I love that you come back to these questions. How do you train your mind? I think so many of us, I at least grew up thinking that, once I'm 25, my brain stops developing and nothing else happens. You're like, right. No, there's this neuroplasticity, neurogenesis, yeah. Like our brain continues to grow and develop.
Right.
And we can intentionally program more of what we want, opposed to this fear-based mindset, this lack, this uncertainty. And I really liked hearing how a lot of these why questions move to what and how questions, mm-hmm. whether it's you as a leader saying, oh, you know, was that true? You know, what can I do better? What can I learn from? And you already have those questions programmed in. So now as you move through taking feedback, which sometimes isn't exactly what you want to hear when you're like, I'm doing great. I'm awesome. Like I'm playing, you know, working to everybody's strengths here, playing my strengths. Mm-hmm. And then you get that feedback that's like, ooh, but you go back to those questions that you've built in of like, what's something that I can learn from this? You know, maybe I don't agree with it, but what if it was? What could I learn? How could I grow? Is really interesting. And I'd be curious. I've heard you talk a little bit about the belief triangle, yes. and how our beliefs impact perception and reality. And so what do you see, or how do you coach folks on kind of building their own belief triangle and understanding where that comes from?
Yeah, I think the first piece of understanding is having awareness to what beliefs do you have that either serve you or do not serve you. And a lot of times we just don't realize throughout our lives, you know, we create, you know, we're called, you know, rules, BS rules, right? I'll keep a PG here. They're BS rules. These are rules that we have taught ourselves that could be right, could be wrong. But the truth is, it's our own perception, right? For example, one of the things that people, I grew up this way, was the belief of, you know, like, you know, the rich people are evil. People that make a lot of money are evil. You know, like money isn't everything. Money doesn't grow on trees. So I actually grew up with a very scarce mindset. And that actually held me back. Because I remember, you know, hitting six figures at 25 and thinking that was a lot of money. And it is for, you know, for sure it's a good amount of money, but being like growing up so poor, I never thought I'd be able to make six figures. I thought I had to be a doctor or a lawyer or some other prestigious career, if you will, not in sales. And I remember earning that and thinking, oh man, I feel kind of weird. Like I didn't deserve it. And that was a really weird feeling. I mean, I was proud, but I felt bad at the same time. You know, like, it's like, I felt proud. I would save a lot of money, but then I'll feel bad to splurge and enjoy the money. I'm like, I had this weird, like, bad money beliefs. So first step for me was I had to get aware. Once I realized, I'm like, oh my God, like, that's not good. Like how do I break free now? And there's many ways you can kind of break free. Once you realize it, breaking free can be done in so many different ways. So for me, in that specific situation, I knew one of the greatest ways to uplift my mindset was to get in a larger environment. Go and spend time. Like when you think you're making a lot of money and you're making 100K and you hang out with people that are making 200K, 300K, 500K, $1 million, you're suddenly like, well, I guess I'm just like, I don't make that much, right? So, but it gives that perception, but then you start realizing they think at a different level. They have different beliefs in their mind. So when you start realizing first the awareness of it, then you start making sure you're around the right environment. But also on top of that, you need to protect your mindset because the hardest territory to manage is right between your ears. And when you realize that, then you start making sure you start blocking out the bad stuff and keeping in the good stuff. And when you keep in the good stuff and you start feeding it consistently, you start shifting how you think. Like whatever you consume consistently, your thoughts will eventually become your beliefs. Your beliefs will become your actions. Your actions become your results. So if you understand that, it starts with breaking those beliefs. So you recognize the beliefs and you start making those shifts. I'll give you another example. So I remember early on, I didn't really understand the value of time. And I remember like, you know, reading this book about this guy who made a lot of money. I'm like, wow, like, you know, like I'm so poor. This guy's making a lot of money. And one of the things he said in there was like, he's like, you need to outsource everything. You know, like he's like, everything I value to be under $1,000 an hour, I outsource. I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, oh, you say, cause you're rich. Like, you know, when you're not making any money, you're like, yes, I had to cut my own grass. Yes, I had to go like, you know, like go grocery shopping. Yes, I have to clean my own house. Like, I got to do all these things I don't want to do because I don't have any money. What we don't realize at the time when we have those beliefs is it holds us back. So I remember thinking to myself, like, he's trying to say time is more valuable than money. Because, you know, once you run out of money, you can always get more money. But if you run out of time, you can't get more time. I'm like, I don't really understand that. But and I started to just like, you know, start listening more and really like being around people who understood that same concept as well, which, by the way, were wildly successful people. I'm like, oh, it's so true. You start realizing time is infinitely more valuable than money. And then, of course, once you start realizing that, you like unlock it and you start making different decisions. And when you start making different decisions, now you have different results. So suddenly, before you know, these things are compounding over and over and over, and they reinforce each other. So that's why when you don't have beliefs that serve you, you have to change those beliefs. And the truth is, we choose those beliefs. Nobody else. We might have been programmed them as a kid, but we can break free of them. And once we learn how to break free of them by making sure we're consuming the right materials, being around the right people, investing into ourselves, then we start becoming a better version of ourselves.
Wow. Yeah. I think you're nailing that, because there are so many of these beliefs that have been programmed that we're not even necessarily aware of, that we run on autopilot, that dictate how we interpret reality, how we act. And we don't even necessarily know that they're there. And I'm curious, as something that's been surprising for me that I didn't really realize, you know, grew up middle-class American, white, straight, cis guy, like, things were pretty easy. Parents were like, yeah, do whatever you want. Do what makes you happy. And as I've interviewed a lot of guests from, you know, different ethnic backgrounds, it's like, oh yeah, like, you know, parents have immigrated to the United States and they are usually not very happy if you're like, yeah, I want to go do this sales thing. I'm not going to go after a doctor, lawyer, whatever you thought that has like the standard income behind it. And I'm curious, like, what'd your parents think about you getting into sales early on?
Yeah. So they weren't happy. You know, what's interesting is, so I remember being 19 years old. So I grew up very, very poor. My parents did immigrate from China. They escaped the communist revolution. They were put in re-education camps. It was a whole thing, but they eventually made it to America, very poor, started a restaurant. And I remember growing up so poor. And I remember working in the restaurant at the age of 5, helping out the restaurant, et cetera. And I remember just that was part of life. I mean, and I remember, like, you know, during summer times, we also did festivals too. And summer times when there's a festival, those were like 18-hour days outside, blazing heat, cooking in front of a stove, serving food. It's very, very exhausting. And I remember we just for a long time, my parents still do the fairs to this day. They sold the restaurant, they do the fairs. So I remember 19 years old, and I'm going to college, and it was summertime, and it was Sunday, and I'm with my dad. He has like a commercial dishwasher in his garage because he's operating out of his house now at this point. And it's like 1 a.m. on a Sunday. We're like cleaning pots and pans, and I'm like super grumpy. And my dad's like, "What's wrong?" You know, I hate these fairs. I hate doing these things, right? I hate, like, you know, we literally in like 3 days we have worked like over 40 hours in 3 days. Like, that is like, we are outworking everyone out here. And he's like, yeah, you know, it's, you know, part of, you know, America, you got to work hard and build your future. That's what we've been able to do. And I remember telling him, I said, Dad, when I get older, when I graduate, I'm going to find a way to make money with my brain. I'm going to find a way where I don't have to physically work hard. Like, I'm physically exhausted right now from being on my feet all day. Like, I don't have to physically be worn out, but I'm going to use my brain to make money. And he's like, oh, okay, sure, you know. And at the time, I was in college. I was supposed to be an architect at that point. I dropped out of architecture school. I was like, just general whatever. And he's like, all right, sure, okay. Well, you do it. Just make sure you graduate. Do what you got to do, right? And I was a decent student. So I remember, like, you know, when I graduated, and I worked the whole time doing all the different things. And I remember when I graduated, I had 5 different job offers on the table. And they were from a $29,500 base salary B2B sales role all the way up to, you know, working banks, analysts, et cetera, roles for like, you know, 60K plus. And I remember looking at all the opportunities and I felt really fortunate that I had a choice. And I turned down all the other ones. I went for the lowest paying one, the sales role. And the thing was, I didn't perceive it as I'm going to the sales role. It was a brand new startup division of a big company. So to me, I perceive it as an opportunity to build a business from scratch, right? To be able to start something from scratch and just kind of create something. And that was just really like, for me, I'm like, wow, that'd be really cool. And I could really put my stamp on something. Once I saw the role, I'm like, oh my God, this is B2B sales. Like I'm just cold call. I didn't know what I didn't know. So I remember telling my parents, so, you know, you're 19 or 20, 21 or 21, 22. You're trying to sell your parents like, oh, this is a great role. I'm building this business. He's like, my dad's like, that sounds like you're in sales. That sounds like you're just like cold calling. He's like, let me tell you a story. When I was in Hong Kong going door to door selling fire extinguishers, I'm like, oh man. I'm like, no, it's not like that. It was totally like that. Exactly like that. I'm like, it's door to door, cold calling, everything. And they were not really happy about it. I struggled for first 7 weeks. People were closing deals every week. I closed zero deals in 7 weeks. And I remember thinking to myself, my parents are right. I should have taken those other jobs. I should have been an accountant. Maybe I should go back to med school. You know, maybe I should do all these things. Like, I'm like, what is wrong with me? Why did I make this terrible? I'm not made for sales. Like, I'm pretty good at customer service, but I'm not, I can't do cold outbound. I can't make a cold call. I can't cold call business by foot. I can't persuade or convince someone to buy. This is not me. I felt unethical. I felt gross. I felt sick. I didn't want to do it. And I remember like, I was like, man, they're right. But once I started kind of figuring it out, started having success, what was really interesting was, you know, for the longest time, for years, when I started having success, I felt kind of proved to my parents that I made a good choice, right? So like they weren't happy at first, but I remember my first six-figure year, I pulled my W-2, I showed it to them. They're like, yeah, that's all right. I'm like, come on. Like, come on, give me a break here. And literally, it got to the point where literally, you know, I was making well above half a mil plus, and I was like bringing my stock on. Like, look at all my money I'm making, look at all I'm doing. And they're finally like, yeah, I guess it's a pretty good decision. Good job. It took like 10 years to get to that point, but they weren't really happy at that point for the longest time. So I really had to prove it to them, right? But they also got to see the evolution of who I become over time. Right. You know, just they got to see me go from this insecure college kid trying to figure out life to someone who could, you know, truly make an impact. And it was actually pretty good at his job. Right. And at that point, they're like, oh, well, I guess you're like, you know, like, I hate to say it, but because money is the easy metric, they're like, well, you're making more money than all your cousins now and the doctors and everything. That's what it all breaks down to. It is what it is. But it took a long time to kind of break them free of that mindset.
Yeah. And getting to that point early on, saying like, I'm going to use my brain to be a knowledge worker to get leverage, because there's only so much you can do in a restaurant with enough, you know, certain amount of plates. Sure, you can raise your, you know, cost or whatnot, or your price per dish and all these things. But the power of being somebody that uses their brain means you may be able to get something done in half the time that somebody else does, or you can find additional leverage, which I think is so powerful. You did talk about this point of being questioning back to why questions. Why did I do this? Why am I here? Is it, I feel nasty. I feel gross. Like, was there a point that really helped you kind of flip into, no, I actually like this. Did you change the story in your head? How did you make that kind of switch from struggling, not seeing success to, oh, this is actually a profession and something that I really enjoy?
It was interesting, as I probably wasn't willing to admit I was in sales for probably at least 5-6 years, even though I had success. What was really interesting is, I think the first piece is, one of the greatest pieces of motivation you can get is progress. Progress is the ultimate motivation. So, you know, by the third month, I actually went from the worst to number one. And then I was able to repeat that over and over. And that was really, that was good validation. I'm like, oh, I can do this. I wasn't this lucky, I think, right? And then I ended up getting promoted multiple times. And much, you know, that was cool. And fast forward, you know, 4 or 5 years, I'm like, oh, I'm pretty good at this. But I felt like an imposter still, because at this time, how old was I? I was like 25, 26, something like that. I'm like, I felt like an imposter, because I was like, can I do this anywhere else? Like, maybe I got lucky with this industry. Maybe I got lucky with this company. Maybe I got lucky. Can I actually do this here? And I also realized I was like the biggest fish in the pond, right? And the comp wasn't that good anyways. I'm like, can I do this somewhere else? is this a repeatable, transferable skills in sales and leadership that I've learned here? So that's when I started looking at other opportunities. And this whole time, I also got my MBA as well, because I'm trying to like improve myself as well. So I got my MBA on the side while I was doing that. And I remember finding another opportunity, and I decided to make an educated leap. But this required me taking a two-step demotion. So I took a two-step demotion to a whole new company. Nobody knew who I was. Nobody knew my track record. And then I'm like, and I remember thinking when I made that leap, I'm like, can I do this? Can I do this again? And I remember like just, you know, jumping this whole new company, new industry, new everything. And I just took everything I learned from before and just started just doing it at massive scale. Like I was like, I outworked everyone early on, just everything I did before. And what was interesting was they actually had some inbound leads, like 10% inbound leads. I used to get no inbound leads. It's all 100% outbound. So I'm like, I got 10% inbound leads. That's insane. That's cool. I've never had someone call in my life before. I'm like, that's amazing.
Team me up.
Team me up, baby. This is a slam dunk. This is a done deal, right? So I remember like, so I started having some success. That was really cool. Started progressing up. And then within 9 months, because most people took about 3 to 5 years to become a sales manager. I got promoted about 9 months. So they promoted me to be a sales manager. And that was like, whoo, okay. That's cool. I think I like sales a little bit, but still was like, I'm not really sure. Like, I'm like, this sales team is a whole new level. These are like this very different breeds. This is way harder than before. Can I lead them to success? Right. And it took me again, multiple years. Like you were just turn the team around. We had success every single year. And then 4.5 years of the company. So typically it takes people about 8 to 10 years at best, if they even get to this level, to get promoted to be a director. I did it in 4.5 years.
Wow.
So that was actually at that point when it solidified my mind. It was like, so this, if you think about this, at this point, I've been my corporate sales career for like really 8.5, 9 years. I'm like, mm-hmm. It took me that long to really be like, I really enjoy sales as the art and who I become. And it wasn't like me just suddenly realizing that. It actually came from other people. It came from other people that said, Marcus, that's pretty cool what you've done, man. I'm like, I didn't do anything. I show up. I work hard. That's just what I do. You know, like this is the story I told myself. And they're like, no, like, I don't think like you realize what you've been able to achieve in your career so far. I'm like, I just didn't have that awareness. I'm like, here I am. To me, I'm still the poor kid from Springfield, Oregon, who grew up with a speech impediment, who could barely speak, who had all these issues. I'm just me still, just me doing me. I just kind of learned a little bit of some things along the way. And they're like, no. And we started kind of talking and people say, you should write a book. You should do this. I'm like, oh, wow. I guess maybe they're right. Maybe I have achieved a little bit of success here. That's pretty neat. So that at that point was like, oh, okay. Sales did this for me. Like, all right. I really do love sales. That's cool. All right. And that was the point. It only took me eight and a half, 9 years, but it eventually got to the point where I'm like, I love sales.
That's amazing. What a wild journey and story going, you know, from zero to hero, taking a leap to another company to say like, and I don't know if I can do this and I'm going to try. And then having kind of, you know, the proof in the pudding of great promotion, rapid acceleration, it is really, really impressive. Oh, there are a lot of things that I'd like to ask, but I'd love to understand, like, I've heard you talk about building an operating system. That's what I love talking with folks about. That's my core OS. It's like, how do you build your core operating system? And so I'd love to hear, how do you think about your personal operating system? What does that mean to you?
Yeah. So this is going to sound egotistical, but I break it down into an acronym with my name. All right, CHAN. All right. This helps me remember easily. All right. So, can I do profanity here? No profanity.
Fire away.
All right, cool. It's nothing crazy. Right. So it's a very simple flaw. I call it, it's the Chan code of how I live my life. All right. So C, cut the bullshit excuses. I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. No excuses. Like, you know, you can have reason to results, but you only choose one. All right. Mm. Like, you know, you take 100% ownership. So cut the bullshit excuses. Right. H, hustle daily. Now, it's not about like, I'm just going to work 100%, you know, 80 hours a week or whatever. This is about making sure that I'm, when I say hustle, it's executing on the high leverage tasks that move the needle. So as a sales professional, it's the IPAs, income producing activities. So that's really important. So it's very clear. I'm not wasting time doing things that don't move the needle. I'm doing the things that have the most impact. That might mean I do less, but it ends up doing creating a greater result. So it's very, very important. Okay. A, always give 100%. That's really simple. I have set rules. I'm not about 5 o'clock, boom, I'm done. Or if I pick up my kid today at 3 o'clock, boom, I'd stop working. That's it. Right. In the time I'm choosing to work, I give 100%. I'm all in. I'm 100% focused. No distractions. I'm not watching Netflix. I'm not messing around social media. I'm zoned in. I have a tight circle of focus and I execute in that time. Right. So I give 100%. All right. And then the end, never give up. At the end of the day, when you have that mindset, that perseverance, that you'll never give, you're like, if there's a will, there's a way. Either way, either I'm gonna find a way, through or around this, I'm going to find a way. So it's understanding that as well. So that's the very simple operating system I've always run by, really my whole life. And it's really served me really, really well. It's easy to say, hard to do.
So much is true in life. And I think as you talk about beliefs, habits, systems, actions, it all ties together, and being able to have something, especially in a simple acronym, that's great, I can go back to this, tying it to yourself and your identity,
right,
is so powerful to say okay, this is me. This, and building off yourself. I love that. That's the first, I think that's the first I've heard from somebody being able to leverage their name in an acronym,
Simple, right? People are like, oh, this guy's so egotistical. I'm like, no, I'm just really not that smart. I have terrible memory. Yeah. I need something easy.
That's all of us. There's so much coming in every day. Right. And right. I know I've heard you talk about I don't watch the news much. So again, try and filter what comes into your life. And I'd love to hear, do you morning routine, nighttime routine, anything like that in your world?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm one of those routine freaks, if you will. So now there's a core OS to that as well, if you will. Okay. So I run what's called the M5. So number one is your mind. So make sure you feed your mind the right things. Number two, M is muscle. So making sure you're working out, exercising, et cetera. Doesn't necessarily mean anything working for 2 hours, but you're moving your body, right? Mind, muscle, matter. So you have purpose. You're clear on your purpose. Okay. Clear purpose. Money. So you're doing things that will generate money. If you can eliminate the problems that money can solve, you now have just left with other problems. And the truth is, money's not everything, but it solves a lot of freaking problems, right? So it's really, that's really key. Okay. And then the last M is marriage. So what that means is not even from a married to a spouse, relationship, but are you treating relationships in your life like a marriage? Friends, family, et cetera. Are they the right people that's in your circle, or is it the wrong people? Right. You are the average 5 people you spend time with. So it's really key. So with those M5, that's inserted into my morning and evening routine. Okay. So that's kind of the framework. All right. So now that makes more sense. Now I'll share with you my morning routine. And I'm gonna tell you right now, what it is today is not what it was when I started. I started habit stacking over time. So it started with maybe a 2 minute thing to now it's evolved to about an hour and a half. All right. And then my morning routine. Not everyone needs to do it. People need to find what works for them to make them fill up their M5. This has filled my M5 up. And ultimately, if I can control my state, then I can perform at a higher level for myself, my family, for my clients, for other people as well. Okay. But again, it starts with serving myself first. Okay. So I wake up like today, wake up at 5 o'clock, turn my alarm off. I brush my teeth, whatever, boom. I go and I work out, and I work out. I do a power 30-minute workout, 360 to 420 repetitions of a specific targeted muscle group, very focused, all right? This whole time, I'm listening to something that's going to feed my mind, right? Something's going to feed my mind, make me grow. I'm not listening to the news. I actually don't listen to music. I listen to music, but not during this workout. I listen to something that's going to feed my mind. So I'm thinking, I'm growing as a result, okay? And then I'm also drinking a lot of water. So I'll drink about 40 ounces of water by this point. So by that point, it's about like 5:45, 40 ounces of water, completely done. Okay. And then I'll go downstairs to my home office. I'll take my vitamins and stuff, right? And then I go to my home office and I write down my goals. I write down my 30-day goals and I write down my one-year goals. All right. I write them all out. Very, very important. After I write them all out, then I'll go and I'll go through a series of affirmations. So I'll go through affirmations for about 5-10 minutes, things that empower me. And then after that, I do what I call my vivid vision. So what I've done is I've written out my exact ideal day 1 year from today, assuming I've achieved every single one of my goals. Okay. And what does that day look like from like when I wake up, my routine, to what's happening, to when I go to bed? And I've written it all in like visceral detail. It's like I wake up at 5 a.m. I roll out of bed super excited and pumped. It's a detailed copy. I've taken all this copy, this vivid vision, I've narrated and I read it out loud to myself and recorded it. And I will listen to it next. So I listen to it every single day. I listen to it. So at this point, it's like 6:10, 6:05, 6:10. I listen to it and I visualize my perfect day. It takes like 5-10 minutes, right? And then after that, I visualize my upcoming day, the day I'm about to enter into, going exactly how I want it to go. Really, really important. So then it's like, if you notice here, I'm hitting multiple elements of all these pieces of the M5, right? And then from there, then I'll check on my team real quick on Slack, right? And then I'll post on LinkedIn. And then I'll actually go on the treadmill at a 6.0 incline. And I'll actually walk about 4,000 steps with a weight vest on for 30 minutes while I engage on LinkedIn to get some extra calorie burn, caloric burn, right? And get my steps in. And then I shower, change, and then I wake my kiddo up, getting ready for school. But that's like the morning routine, okay? So you ready for my nighttime routine?
Let's go. I'm already taking notes. This is all great.
Right. I'm getting fired up just talking about this. All right. So because reality is once you're done the morning routine, the day can go to hell. Who knows what's going to happen, right? Totally. Like that's what happens, whatever. So
totally.
Nighttime routine. So I'll put my kiddo down. He goes to sleep kind of late, unfortunately, like 9:30, 10. So it is what it is. But he's 5 too. I'm like, go sleep sooner, whatever. Anyways.
He's supposed to be in bed before that.
I know, whatever. So anyway, so once he's down, brush your teeth, change. So there's a couple of things I do. So number one, I do try to optimize my sleep as much as possible. I have a sleeping disorder. So in my bedroom, it's all red lights. So we have red lights. So only red lights on after 8 o'clock in my room. Okay. All red lights. So brush your teeth, change, et cetera. I'll then go and I'll actually write out 3 to 5 things I did that day that I'm grateful for that drive me towards my monthly goal. So I have a very tight feedback loop now. See, notice I'm like, okay, did I do the right high leverage activities, the right IPAs, or did I do the wrong things? All right. So 3 to 5 minimum. And then I also write one improvement. What's one thing I would do differently for the next day? So again, this helps me have a tight feedback loop. So for example, let's just say if I'm trying to eat really clean, that's part of what I think I want to do for this month. And man, we just had some candy in the house and I ate the candy. Ah, okay. Improvement. Don't eat 2 boxes of hot tamales tomorrow. All right, cool. All right. So that's really, really important. Okay. And then I'll go ahead. So once I have that all done, I'll actually re-review my goals again. Right. My 1 year goals, read them through again. And then from there, I'll read for like maybe 10, 15 minutes. I'll meditate for like maybe 5 minutes and then I go to bed. And that just helps me with the nighttime routine as well.
Oh my gosh. I know what I'm doing tomorrow morning and tonight. I love so many components of that. Again, as you figure out what works for you and you refine over time, and what works today may not work tomorrow, but getting into the brain, helping train, through asking yourself questions, affirmations, gratitude, all these pieces we're finding now, science is showing how this is so beneficial.
Correct.
For how we show up and how we can actually sustain over the long term 100%. Versus just the hustle, hustle, hustle. Like I just got to show up and grind today and run on the hamster wheel.
right.
Damn. All right. That was better than I could have expected. So thank you on that front, Marcus. Sure. That was awesome. I'm going to give you a couple rapid fire questions as we wrap things up here. Do you like winning or dislike losing more?
I probably dislike losing more. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I hate failure. I mean, just like, I mean, either you win or you learn, but still, I hate not achieving what I want to achieve. There's something about it, right?
Yep. It definitely grinds my gears. What does success mean to you today?
Happiness. Being able to do whatever you want, whenever you want, with whoever you want.
I think that is so, so, so powerful. And what's one thing you wish you would have known when you started selling?
Well, number one, only take advice from those who've only achieved what you achieve at a massive level consistently. Early on, I made mistakes listening to the wrong people. That definitely held me back. And I think even today, it's probably even more challenging because, you know, you have LinkedIn, you have YouTube, you have way more sources now. And there's a lot of false gurus out there. Many people who have not carried the bag, had success consistently. Maybe they're a one-hit wonder, whatever, or you know, they're just trying to just sell whatever product they have. And I think there's a lot of noise in the marketplace. So being able to cut through the noise, find the right people to follow. This is for anything, whether it's sales, communication, leadership, find the right people and stick to those people and only listen to the people that can truly, truly help you because they've already done it at a massive scale.
Yeah, I love it. Stand on the shoulder of giants, right?
That's right.
So Marcus, this was excellent. There are so many things for folks to take away and in nice acronyms. And if folks want to call themselves Chan as well to remind themselves for their operating system, I think we got a good one for it. So I love it, man. I know where I can find you. I've been following you for a long time. Where do you like folks to go to find you and engage with you?
Totally. So a couple of easy places. Number one, head over to LinkedIn. Look at Marcus Chan. Should be the only guy in there says Speedos in the body of the profile. So it's really, really easy. And then number two, you can head over to my website, which is sixfiguresalesacademy.com. There's like free training, free resources, a bunch of free stuff to help you sell and earn more.
Man, this is fantastic. Our listeners are going to be able to go out and crush it. And obviously, if they're trying to make another 50, 100K, hit up Marcus, get in touch as he's, as I've been following him, you'll see text messages on his thread of folks that are like, holy shit, this works, man. I'm crushing it. So there's some great stuff out there. So go check him out. And until next time, let's go make today great.
It's thanks to help from listeners like you. This podcast can continue to grow and help others. If you found anything helpful in today's episode, please take a second, share with a friend, and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast today. Thanks.